It's time for The Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's The Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston, or maybe a listener on 100.3 FM as well, either way. Hey, we got a great show planned for today. In fact, let's get started with it right now. With us on the phone is Danny DeSantis. Danny DeSantis is from McLaren of Boston. Danny, good morning and welcome to the Car Doctor program.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. How are you? Hey, your name is kind of legendary all around the South Shore, but you opened up a legendary dealership in Norwell, McLaren of Boston.
Yes, that's correct.
And
enjoying every minute of it.
And I have only driven a McLaren Spider. I haven't driven the most expensive of them, but they are pretty phenomenal cars. And speaking of phenomenal, you have four cars coming out from. I guess if you have more than one or something, you're a collector, right?
I think that is the truth. But you know, you can be a collector with just one car because some of the cars are very special.
And the ones you have coming out there now, they're from a guy out in New York, right?
Yeah, he's actually New Jersey.
New Jersey?
And Miami, Florida. Yeah, Michael Fuchs, he's got quite an extensive car collection, probably the largest, one of the largest in the United States. But he is a very avid McLaren collector and gets car number two of every single model.
And he has sort of a unique color palette of his cars, doesn't he?
He certainly does. He's got on his 720, he's got it's called Fuchsia, which is like a pinky purple with white interior. His center is 100% carbon fiber. It's almost its own color. It's that he has that no one else can copy. It's a green, but you can see the carbon fiber right through it, also white interior. He's got his orange 12C and his purple white 12C Spider here.
Yeah, that's a pretty unique color collection, I think. Yeah, and you guys are doing a cars and coffee event this morning, right?
Yes, today is our last one for the year, so there's going to be a lot of people here. It's from 10 to 12. Like I said, featuring the Michael Fuchs collection, we've got lots of new and used McLarens here amongst pretty much every other brand. So we've got some special cars coming. We've got a Conestoga coming. We've got a Pagani coming. We've got lots of really neat stuff that'll be here today for the final show.
And the some of your cars. I was on your website last night. 2.7 million.
Yep, we have a carbon fiber P1, which is still brand new. It's on MSO. It's got 100 miles on it. It's delivery miles. It's a full carbon fiber body car. You can see the carbon fiber right through. It's the only one to ever come to the United States as a carbon fiber body car. The other ones that were here, there's probably five or seven other carbon body cars that are here in the United States that all came as a regular body and sent back to have the carbon fiber body installed in the tune of like $350,000 plus freight and back and forth to Logan. So it's a pretty special car. We've got another P1 here, an orange one. We've got pretty much everything here.
Yeah. Now, who buys McLarens? Who's the typical buyer of a McLaren?
It's really everybody. You'd be surprised. And I know I was completely surprised when I took over the dealership or opened the dealership to McLaren, you know, being a Chevrolet and a Ford dealer for many, many years. That, you know, you really get everybody that buys the car. We get women. We get, you know, doctors. We get sports athletes, professionals. We get really the whole gamut of everybody buying the cars. Lots and lots of, you know, people sometimes you wouldn't think would be buying the car. Lots of younger people and all the way up to, you know, anybody that just enjoys the product.
Our studio's over in Marina Bay, and somebody over here has a McLaren. I've seen it around here from time to time. So,
I believe the gentleman there he's got it's a dark gray, almost black 570. Yep. There's tons. We've got them in Boston. We sold 79 new cars last year, and 48 new the year before. So we're on pace to break both those numbers this year. And amongst another as many used, you know what I mean, certified McLarens. So there's lots of them in the area now. There's a lot more than you're thinking. Like I said, if you came by here today, or anybody wants to come by and see, you'll see that, you know, you'll see at least 50 McLarens here on the property.
Wow. And did I hear a rumor you're opening another high-end dealership somewhere around there?
I am, but it's not around here. It's a little bit away from here. Unfortunately, I can't say where it is.
All right.
But the rumor is correct.
Well, I guess I know some people you know. Maybe that's what it is. So, yeah. I heard some stories. Well, I know you got a busy day for today. Before I let you go, I have one question. It's just totally got nothing to do with this. Do you still spend all your money on boats that go really fast?
I do. I was actually doing that the last couple of weekends, but yes, I still do. Unfortunately, that is another little bit of a collective problem that I have, but I do spend a lot of time going fast in boats. We did a marathon run about 250 miles 2 weeks ago, and we averaged 150 miles an hour in a pleasure boat with five people in the boat.
Yeah, I've caught some of that stuff, and it's pretty amazing. Dan, thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday morning. Cars and Coffee today. Let's give out the address. It's right in Norwell, but what's the address there?
It's 22 Pond Street, right in Norwell, Mass., right on Route 123, right across from the Big Y, and also Porsche and Audi of Norwell. We're all right together.
In fact, that corner was a Mercedes dealership for people that go way back, right?
It certainly was. It was Mercedes. It was Subaru. It was Volvo. It was Lexus. This is a very popular building.
Yeah, it certainly is. And the event's going to be 10 to 2 today, and there is going to be, I don't know, what, $40 million worth of cars parked there?
There'll be $40 million or $50 million easy worth of cars here.
Yeah. Well, not often you get to see something like that, and with everything that's going on in the world, why not go down to your dealership, and I'm sure anybody who walks by is got to put a smile on their face.
Absolutely will do. Thank you very much.
All right.
Boston. Everybody have a great day.
All right. Take care, Danny. Bye-bye. That was Danny DeSantis, the owner of Boston McLaren, which is actually in Norwell. It is a they have some very interesting cars there besides McLarens. They have last time I went by there was a Ferrari there. And I think, and I don't know this to be 100% true anymore, one of their technicians is a graduate of South Shore Votech in Hanover. So pretty interesting stuff going down there in the little town of Norwell. And again, where how often can you go see millions and millions of dollars worth of cars all in one spot? And McLarens are a pretty interesting car as it is. For a short time, I knew the president of McLaren. He actually lives in Connecticut now. And a good guy. And he is, we were talking about some of the cars, and I think it was 2 years ago at the New England Motor Press Ragtop Ramble, McLaren came out to our event, and I had the pleasure of driving a McLaren up to Maine with the, happened to be the McLaren PR person was in the car. And normally we prefer not to have the person with the vehicle, but in this case, just getting in and out of it was a little bit of a trick. So kind of good to spend some time in a car that I'll never be able to afford if I sell everything I own and then some. There was an article, and a couple people let me know about this. There was an article in the Boston Globe that says, "Who are we based on what we drive?" And it says, technically, they're just vehicles meant to transport humans and their cargo from point A to B, but we all know a car is more than just a car. Not everybody believes that. It's an expression of who we are, of our aspirations and wants, and I guess if you own a McLaren, you know. As a fact demonstrated by a rusty old Dodge Caravan sputtering along Route 128 with a bumper sticker that read, "My car is a status symbol, a symbol of me being poor," is what it says. Is there something even larger to be learned from our vehicle choices? Collectively, do they reveal patterns and a little something about the places we live? It turns out they do. The Globe analyzed data provided by the Mass RMV of 4.6 million private cars and trucks registered in the state. What stands out? Jeep Wranglers in Nantucket, and all over Cape Cod, by the way. Mercedes in Weston. Boston is chock full of Honda Accords and Toyota Camrys, but also has a few Ferraris and a Plymouth Valiant. For a glimpse of what it might mean, let's start with the Berkshires, where there are essentially two types of towns, Subaru towns and Chevrolet Silverado towns. The Silverado, Chevrolet's full-size pickup truck, when nothing than the most dependable will do, rules in the eastern half of the country, county rather, with a lock on the entire northeast corner. And the top vehicle in Adams, Cheshire, Clarksburg, Florida, Hinsdale, Lanesboro, Lee, Otis, Peru, Sheffield, Wilmington, and Windsor. In the southern end of the county, Subaru is the king for cutting through the snow and getting a really good cup of coffee, a little editorial thing I think they added in there. The all-wheel drive Forester is a top vehicle in 20 towns in Massachusetts. Not a big surprise. Subaru sells a lot of cars here. And nine of them are in the Berkshires, Great Barrington, Lenox, Beckett, Egremont, Monterey, Mount Washington, New Marlborough, Stockbridge, West Stockbridge. Some of those towns I bet you didn't even know existed. There are some small towns out in the Berkshires with full town, you know, a police chief, a mayor, and there might only be 800 or 900 people that live in the town. Subaru Outback is tops in Richmond, Sandusfield, and Williamstown. Let's see what else we have here. Politically, the Berkshire is a solidly blue, but in the past presidential election, Donald Trump generally fared much better in towns where Silverados were the top choice. Moving on, when looking at one place in the state that is the most in love with a particular model vehicle, disregarding tiny towns where there are fewer than 100 vehicles, a clear winner is Nantucket, where 11.4% of all registered vehicles are a Jeep Wrangler, a classic symbol of summer. Like Nantucket itself, 1,597 Wranglers on the island have big tires that are perfect for driving on beaches. Big tires aren't really meant for driving on beaches. And wide bumpers that are great for holding many years of oversand vehicle permits. So as not to be confused with those renters with the AC stickers. Lawrence is close by with dependability. Honda Accord counts for nearly 10% of the registered vehicles. The Accord is also a top car in Boston. There are about 11,000 in the city, followed by the Camry. Well, number one and number two sales in the country, so that makes sense. Rounding out the top 10 are Corolla, Honda Civic, Toyota RAV4, Honda CR-V, Nissan Altima, Toyota Highlander, Nissan Rogue, Subaru Forester. And it says, interesting, Revere and Boston have been the same top seven cars. Toyota and Honda are the two top markets in the city by a significant amount. Again, why not? Whereas the Plymouth is on its dying days. There are just 55 left in the city, including two Valiants. But they still outnumber the 35 registered Ferraris in the city. When it comes to love for a particular manufacturer, Lawrence, again, is top for Hondas, which make up more than 30% of all vehicles. On the Outer Cape, there's a deep love for Toyota, with Wellfleet, Eastham, and Orleans coming in second and third, and fourth for Allegiance and manufacturer. Toyota makes up a quarter of all the cars on the Cape towns. Statewide, Toyota is the number one make, according to 17.7% of all cars, followed by Honda, Ford. About time you see some American car companies in here. Ford, Chevrolet, Nissan, Jeep, Subaru. Is Jeep American? It's owned by Fiat. I guess it is. The Camry is top-selling car in 112 cities and towns. The Silverado in 70. So, of course, Chevrolet. Accord leading in 43. CR-V in 28. The Toyota Tacoma, the midsize pickup, is a favorite of outdoorsy types, leading in 19 with a strong presence on both Cape Cod and Cape Ann. That's interesting because as popular as the Tacoma is, it's nowhere near as popular as some of the other trucks. Toyota Prius is topped in 9 towns, including Amherst, Northampton, and Lincoln, but not Cambridge, where it's 4th. And let's talk about luxury, according to the article here. In Weston, the richest town in the state, loves its Mercedes-Benz, with the gourmet German manufacturer responsible for nearly 10% of all the registered vehicle owners in town. Tops in the state, Linfield, Dover, Wellesley also loved their Mercedes, counts for about 7% of all the cars. Weston also led its way for BMWs. BMWs accounted for close to 9% of all the vehicles, followed by Dover, Wellesley, Sudbury, and Manchester-by-the-Sea. Not every car in Weston screams Weston. The two most popular models in town are the Honda CR-V, Jeep Wrangler, and BMW X5, probably because it's the maid's car or something. Carlisle, Concord, Sherburne, Brookline, Lexington, and Wayland towns. They're also the top 20 richest per capita. And what about the future? Well, it appears to involve compact SUVs, according to data from Massachusetts State Auto Dealers Association. Toyota RAV4 was the best-selling model in a landslide for the first 4 months of the year. Bay State has purchased about 5,500 RAVs in April, followed by its fellow compact SUV, the CR-V, and the Nissan Rogue. But coming in fourth was a very odd, old, and familiar, the F-Series truck, which makes a whole bunch of sense. So that gives you a little bit of a profile about what the what people are buying in Massachusetts. I know I kind of rattled them off fast, but I think you can find it on Boston.com as well, or BostonGlobe.com. One or the other. It was a couple days ago, and again, I got a message from one of our listeners. I got an email from one of my readers, and they thought I'd find it interesting, and it was. So what's going on with the Volkswagen Beetle? Well, if you want one, you better buy it next year, because that's going to be the end. The up-and-down saga of the Volkswagen Beetle finally has a conclusion, they're saying. The 2019 Volkswagen Beetle Final Edition is what they're calling it. The automaker announced this just 2 days ago and signals an end to the line of the iconic coupe and Volkswagen's second convertible's second reboot, or third, depending on what you call it. Production of the Beetle will end in July at Volkswagen's Pueblo, Mexico assembly plant. So that is the end of the Volkswagen Beetle. But I heard the one of the reasons is there may be, they're not going to do away with convertibles. They may be coming out with a Jetta-based convertible. So essentially about the same size car. It's going to be a Volkswagen Jetta, which a lot of people like that car. So envision a two-door Jetta with a folding roof that's still a cloth roof, not to be confused with the Eos, which they don't make anymore. So something that could take the place sort of as both and be able to work out. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Why don't we take a call? Let's talk to John. Good morning, John.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a question. I need to put oil into a friend's car. It's about a quart low. The 99 Saab Turbo 9.3.
Mm-hmm.
So the owner's manual says 10.30 or 10.40. Now, I don't know what's in there now. Is there any problem with mixing synthetic with conventional? Or
no, because synthetic oil is made from conventional base stock. It's just squished down and processed so all the molecules are the same size. So that's really what sort of makes synthetic oil special. If you put 10.30 in a car that's got 10.40, it's not, and especially only a quart, it's not going to make any difference. If you put 10.40 in a car that's got 10.30 in it, it might, you know, all of a sudden now you might have 10.31 or something, but it's not going to make any difference. If you said to me, the car is down about 2.5 quarts of oil, and I have 3 quarts of oil that are, I don't know, pick something, Castrol, and I have no idea what's in there, I would tell you to just change the oil on it instead, because sometimes, in a very rare occasion, when you do sort of a 50-50 mix, sometimes the additives don't always agree with each other. It's because all oil has additives in it. But just adding a quart, you could add a quart of pretty much anything to the car, and it's not really going to make a difference.
Okay.
Good to
know.
All right.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Well, you just bought a new car, and what do you think the biggest expense of owning it? Is it the gasoline? No. See, depreciation. On average, new cars depreciate about $3,000 a year. In the AAA annual Your Driving Cost study, we found the average cost to own and operate a new vehicle in 2018 is $8,849. The average cost. That's for a new car, or just under 59 cents a mile for vehicles averaging 15,000 miles of annual driving. Well, fuel, maintenance, repairs, and insurance get the most attention. The largest expense associated with buying a new car is something many drivers fail to even consider, and that's depreciation. So, if you're thinking about buying a new car, and you don't keep it for that long, you know, if you keep it for 15 years, pretty much anything's going to depreciate. But maybe you want to look at what a similar car, so, you know, back up a couple years with the model, and see how much that depreciated over the couple years, how old it is. I know somebody who went out and bought a high-performance Volkswagen, and they did it because that's a car that tends to hold its value more, even though you pay more for it. So his thought behind it was, when I go to trade it in 4 or 5 years, it'll be worth closer to what I paid for it. We'll have to wait and see how that works out. I'm not so sure. Of course, I remember doing, this was years and years ago, the financial investment guy, Jonathan Pond. Jonathan Pond, who gives financial advice all over the place. In fact, he's doing one of the men's clubs I was just at. I think it was Arlington, maybe, and gave a little talk. He was a guest speaker coming in, I think it's for September. And I kind of wanted to go up there and see him because he offers some pretty good advice. But we were doing a talk show together, and he was talking about what he does. And he buys a one-year-old Toyota Corolla. That's his car. Because he's not a car guy, he's a money guy. And he said, they last a really long time. I let somebody else take all the depreciation out of the car the first year, and then I have a good quality car afterwards. But buyers often only give priority to the purchase price and monthly payment. And that's something that happens a lot of times too, is you go into a car dealership and they're like, how much do you want to pay per month? I want to know how much the car costs, because how much you want to pay per month can be a pretty wide open question. By the way, at Danny DeSantis' McLaren dealership, most of those cars people pay cash for them. So $300,000, $400,000, $1 million, $2 million, they don't go finance. They pay cash, which is sort of interesting. The secret of minimizing depreciation cost. Keep your car for a long time and keep it well-maintained, and even consider buying a quality pre-owned vehicle. Who said that? I did. This is what it says in the news release here. The annual driving cost study looked at 45 top-selling 2018 model year vehicles across 9 categories. And some of the annual costs, a small sedan, $6,600. Hybrids, $7,400. Hey, Can you turn on microphone 2 there, Keith? Sure. John Costello, grab that microphone. That one over there. That one over there. I think it's that one.
Hey, what are
you doing here?
I'm heading out to South Boston for a live remote.
Are you?
Yes.
When's that going to be?
Over on West Broadway and like all the letter streets and stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So BCD?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm really where I used to live.
Yeah, really? You're South Boston?
Yeah, I used to live on D Street there.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Uh-huh. Charlie on the MTA.
Growing up on D Street. So,
blah, blah, blah.
So the Irish Hip Parade's going to be, that's probably around 1 o'clock?
No, I'm going to be going on live around 11.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Professor Paul will be here, and then I'll, like, kind of cross over with Marvelous Matt as well. So, I don't even know what my role is.
Do you know where you're going to be?
I got T-shirts.
You know where you're
going to
be?
No. I think around I Street. Somebody told me.
All right.
We're going out to our great sponsor, the City of Boston Credit.
Oh, okay. Well, you didn't say that. Boston Credit.
This kind of fell in my lap.
All right.
Like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, nobody knows about it except for me.
And now Paul
will know, like, when I say, Paul, can I come on? Paul.
Yeah.
Paul, can I come on?
So good stuff for the Irish Hit Parade. And also,
Oh?
I went to Bates and Weymouth this Wednesday night.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome
and,
to see you.
And a great little restaurant in the Landing. And who was behind the bar?
Who?
You!
Oh,
you were behind the bar!
Yeah, it's a great spot. It's only open for 7 months, and it's still. I was talking to somebody last night as I was behind the bar as well, and they were asking for music and trivia. And it's a baby. It's an infant still. It's only 7 months old, so it's baby steps, and they're fine tuning some things. And so it's a great spot. It's really truly turned into a nice neighborhood spot, but with a fantastic menu. Like
it's a good. I mean, we just had appetizer. It was great. I put a little review on TripAdvisor. It's a good place.
Thanks.
It's a good place, yeah.
All right. Well, we love you, and I'll be listening to you.
All right. Okay.
All right, I gotta go.
You can go.
Anything else?
Yeah.
Can I be dismissed, please?
Huh?
Can I be dismissed? Because I don't even know where I'm going.
Well, the two trucks out there. Take
I know.
One.
Yeah. Way clear across the parking lot.
I know. All right.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Awesome. Bye.
Our buddy Johnny Costello, who's here on Sundays with the Feast of Irish Music. What?
Real quick.
What?
Can I talk about the BMW that you drove? The BMW that's parked outside.
Yes.
My son has a Sport Edition Jeff Gordon Dodge 200M.
300M.
No, he has a 200.
200, all right.
The body's very, very similar.
The Mercedes wouldn't like to hear that. I mean, BMW wouldn't want to hear
that. I know, but I'm not kidding. Like, do you know which bodies I'm talking about? The 300M is a bigger one.
Yeah.
The 200M, the Jeff Gordon model.
I don't think I've ever seen a 200M.
Yeah, I know it's definitely not a 300.
Yeah.
300's bigger. It's got like a boxy
big.
Look at that.
Yeah, 300's big.
No, this little. Looks just, well, not just like that, but very similar.
I'm going to have to
look
it up.
But the price tag is a lot different.
A lot different, yeah. Yeah, see ya. We'll talk about that car next week. But
that'd be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Later. We'll talk about both those cars next week. Off goes Johnny Costello, who does the Feast of Irish Music just before Seamus on Sundays, fills in here on Saturdays, and he's going to be at the City of Boston Credit Union today.
Special.
Just found out about it. So if you want to be involved in that type of stuff, if you like the Irish programming, maybe this program here, The Answer with Joe Agati, and... you're looking for a job. Salem Media Group is growing. They're looking for folks to start work here to sell to advertisers some of the programs you listen to, like this one, the Irish Hit Parade, all kinds of stuff. So they're looking for people. It's a fun, everybody I talk to on Saturdays, they're all fun people. I don't come here during the week, but Pat Ryan's great. Carol's great. Those are the people I deal with on a regular basis. So always fun. Of course, Matt, the operations guy, always takes care of us when we need stuff. So if you'd like to work here and have to deal with the likes of Johnny Costello and me and there's professionals like Seamus and Matt and Paul. But there's goofballs like me and Johnny Costello. Email Pat Ryan. It's patr@salemboston.com. And maybe there's a place for you here. It could be fun. Especially, my wife could work here. She's looking for a job.
Everyone can work here.
That's right. Hey, why don't we take a break? It's about 9 o'clock. You're listening to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, or 100.3 FM. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Well, the other day I went out my way. My pappy said, son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln. Have you heard the story of the hot rod race with the Fords and the Lincolns was setting the pace? That story is true, I'm here to say I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor and it's really souped up that Model
A. And welcome back
to
the Car Doctor program. Phone number 617-770-3030. Phone lines are open if you want to join us. Speaking of hot rod Lincolns, sort of in the same company, Ford is going to end ads for its sedans. Its Ford car sedan, you know, they're going to stop selling sedans. The automaker has ended all nationwide marketing of the Fiesta, the Focus, the Fusion, and Taurus, and also dialing back on regional spending in certain markets. Even though the Fusion will remain in showrooms for at least the next 2 years, Ford's Vice President of U.S. Sales and Marketing, a service, said the automaker plans to redeploy the money on vehicles such as the Mustang, EcoSport, and a slew of next-generation utilities coming by the end of the decade. Well, the next-generation utilities aren't here yet, so I kind of wonder about that. Ford Toyota business prompts a Flex N Gate expansion. The Flex N Gate is doubling the size of its plastic plants in Illinois to nearly 100,000. And so they're going to be the people that supply the upper and lower grills for Ford and Toyota. And speaking of Toyota, Toyota and Geely, they're in talks about hybrid cooperation. They said... Toyota's going to talk to the Chinese company in its gas electric hybrid technology, but nothing has been decided. A person familiar with the situation told Reuters that talks apparently involve a Chinese supplier of electric battery technology, as both companies have already been associated, but they've been working with them, but they've been working separately, and maybe there's some economies of scale working together. And if you are living outside of our broadcast area and you're listening online and you've heard some conversation about the Chevrolet Bolt with a B, not Volt with a V, General Motors plans to expand the availability of the Chevrolet Bolt to new markets, said Pam Fletcher, vice president of the automaker's global electric vehicle programs. So more Bolts to be around. Speaking of which, battery investment GM is investing $2 billion. No, I'm sorry, $28 billion. No, I don't even have that right. $28 million. I had to count a lot of zeros. There's a lot of zeros here. To make additional major enhancements beginning this fall in battery development and testing at its global tech center in Warren, Michigan. I've been to that tech center. It's a pretty interesting place. That's where I got to see, they're still working on hydrogen cars, so I got to see their hydrogen fuel cell. And then I got to see, something I wasn't supposed to see. I'm pretty sure I saw the engine for this new mid-engine Corvette. It was sort of sitting in the corner. Nothing like it is being made anywhere, or it's not in any car that GM owns right now. And there it was, sitting over in the corner with, and I kind of wonder if they did it on purpose, because it was like half uncovered. Just enough to make you interested in what was going on with it. But I kind of wanted to try to get a picture of it. But I talked to one of the other guys I was with, and I said, hey, come here. Comes over, and he goes, 4-cam overhead, small block-looking Chevy engine. I said, what do you think that's going? And both of us said, mid-engine Corvette. So, I mean, the mid-engine Corvette is I swear GM is releasing the spy photos, even though they are from a spy photo company. But spy photographers have again captured the mid-engine C8 Corvette during testing, this time in Germany. The photos provide the best view of the car. It looks like a Corvette with the cabin moved forward. So shorter hood, almost has a big NSX sort of look to it. Previous photos show the cab forward design, but now the huge side air scoops are also visible. Also visible new vents to the front to cool the oil or transmission fluid. In the back, there appears to be heat extractors on the flanks, quad exhausts at the corners, a restrained-looking rear wing. The wing actually looks almost too restrained. General Motors has not confirmed plans for the mid-engine Corvette, but why are they making copies of them like this? So I'm pretty sure there'll be a mid-engine Corvette in the not-too-distant future. Ford has talked about some sort of Mustang and said Ford has teased up the upcoming Mustang-inspired battery-electric crossover through a sketch of the back of the vehicle, which kind of looks like a Mustang. The teaser image first shared with Forbes features a dark silhouette marked with a Mustang signature three-bar headlights. The roof is higher than the standard Mustang. Ford has said the vehicle, which will have a range of about 300 miles, will come out in 2020. Details of the vehicle have been sparse. It was originally thought to call it the Mark 1, which sounds stupid. Production will be originally slated for Flat Rock, Michigan, but Ford will this year has decided instead to build the vehicles in Mexico. I wonder if they're going to change their mind soon. Who knows? 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's take a call. All right. Hey, good morning. How are you?
Hi, car doctor?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Mike calling. Hey, just a quick one. I wanted to follow up on your depreciation of cars.
Yep.
I've just been through that very recently, and it's really a great deal, but I wanted to just pass on my information is that it took me 3 to 4 months to find the right car. I mean, a lot of research goes into looking at a pre-owned car, using car gurus and cars.com. And, looking at a pretty wide range of 100 miles away. But at the end, I ended up buying a car from right up the street from me from a local dealer. 30% off of list. The car was first registered in January of this year. I bought it in June. I got it for 30% off of the list price of the car. And the amazing thing is in some of these cars, the warranties are better on a used car.
Yeah.
Because they warranted all the way through. This thing has a bumper-to-bumper warranty through 2022.
Right.
So it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it can be a luxury car or it can be not a luxury car. And sometimes what happens when they're certified pre-owned, and certified pre-owned, that terminology means almost nothing sometimes because some dealers claim to certify their own cars, which doesn't mean a lot. Sometimes it's just a matter of hanging a tag in the window that says certified pre-owned, but other times it really does mean they're looking at the better cars that they have, and they might offer a 6-year 100,000 mile bumper to bumper warranty, which could be as good as the car was when it was new, and certainly better than some new cars that are out there now. So you're right, you can do that, and you can save some money. I was talking to somebody who bought a very high-end car and they said, oh, yeah, it was about $60,000 off list price. I'm like, jeez. And it was 2 years old and came with a warranty.
Yeah, I got $30,000 off of mine, off of the list price.
Yeah.
There was an article recently on the cars, and the Hyundai was number one, and I forget who was number two, but Lexus was number three. I ended up buying a Lexus.
Yeah.
But they really spend, and this is the second one I bought through them like this. And it's just been, and they really stand up on the warranties. They make sure they do. So, again, but the main thing I want to say is research. You got to really look at the car faxes, look at them. And I'm a car guy. I talk to you quite a bit.
Yep.
You got to really spend your homework on doing it, but it pays off in the long run.
It really does. And these sites, like you said, Car Gurus, cars.com, IC Cars, they all have some great tools. In fact, IC Cars, and we're going to be talking to Julie next week, they have this new little thing called a VIN decoder where you can walk up to a car that you're considering buying. If you have a smartphone, you take a picture of the barcode for the vehicle identification number. Right. It can let you know where the recall's updated. It picks the car out. It shows what other cars are available in the area, and it really lets you do some price comparison based right on the car that you're looking at right at that very minute. So there are some great tools out there that make it a little bit easier. Unfortunately, not everyone is like you, and they go by and they're like, I like the red one. And that's where they make the mistake sometimes.
Homework like usual. Thank you very much.
All right.
It's always a great show.
All right. Take care, Michael. Bye-bye. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Keith, do we have another call?
Yes. Oh, here I am. Hi. Yes, Rick from Boston.
All right. We haven't talked to Rick in a little bit.
I guess you didn't talk to him last week, so
no,
you didn't
no.
have ice
so,
cream last
yeah,
week.
There we go. Okay, let's get Rick on the phone here. Rick, is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Hey, I finally got your letter.
Oh, good. Yeah, I know. Actually, what happened was that the other week, I walked in and just turned the radio on because I was busy doing something and just caught the very start of it. So my wife and I were able to hear you go through the letter, Ned, and I appreciate what you said. And I was going to call you last week, but my kids shanghai me for my birthday, and so.
Oh, well, happy birthday! What are you? 59 again?
No, you can add 11 to that.
All right.
And that what I was going to comment on is that the other week I was over in Braintree at dusk. And I'm waiting at an intersection. I see this one car coming down the road. And then the cars behind it came over the crest, and they had the lights on. And it totally hit the car that was driving without its lights on. And I would not have been able to see it because of the other lights in that. And so, which, Chris, I had this situation because you look down. Oh, they're far enough away I can pull out.
Yeah.
And the lights are hiding the car in front of them because they don't have the lights on.
Well, that's why like Canada has daytime running lights, so lights that are on all the time, just to make cars that much more visible, whether it's in the daytime, or dusk, or at nighttime.
Yeah, and that.
Yeah, one of the problems I'll say with daytime running lights is if they're the style, you know, sometimes people think of them and they have them on all the time, and if they're not automatic headlights, which some cars aren't, you drive around and you're only driving around with the daytime running lights on and your taillights aren't on. So, and the daytime running lights are making enough light where you think, oh, my lights must be on, and then you look down at the dash and you just go, oh, the dash lights aren't on. Oh, I haven't turned the headlights on yet. So, you know, we try to make improvements sometimes, and sometimes we stumble around with it every once in a while. So,
oh yeah, and that, you know, like my motorcycle always has a headlight
right
on.
Right. Oh yeah, that's been the case for as long as I can remember. So. So
I go back a little farther and know it wasn't always the case.
Well, I'm trying to think back. The oldest motorcycle I had was in the 70s, and I guess it was an on-off and high beam switch. So yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey Rick, always a pleasure.
Okay. Well, thank you for what your comments on the
letter. All right. Sure thing.
Right. Happy birthday, Rick.
All right.
Speaking of Rick's comments from last week and the Ford Driving Skills for Life program that is supposed to be taking place today and tomorrow up in North Andover. The plan is it's still going to happen tomorrow, but they, due to everything that's the tragedy that's going on up in Lawrence and North Andover, they have canceled the event for today. So if you were signed up for Driving Skills for Life for today, check your email and check the website and find out what's going on. They are going to try to do it tomorrow, but they just figure there's way too much going on. And although they're way up in North Andover, kind of way at the edge of town, still they decided for safety purposes not to bring extra people up there. So if you were going to Driving Skills for Life today, you're not, is the bottom line. So I think we have Paul on the phone, our buddy Paul from Braintree. Paul, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. Let me turn the radio on. When you're on hold, you can hear the caller, but you can't hear you.
We're halfway there now.
Well, that's true. Yeah. You know, I mean,
before you couldn't hear anybody.
Then you'll be fine.
Yeah, it must just be another button we haven't pushed yet.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah,
that's all right. It looks easier than it is. But
you get some knowledge in that.
Yeah, a little bit. Getting a little rusty. Maybe I should dust it off. There's a Pat.
There you go. PatR@SalemBoston.com.
Okay.
And you can get a job here. You can get a job.
What's that? I'm sorry.
And you can get a job. Yeah.
Oh, great. I could use it. The reason I called, I think I sent you, forwarded you something about a 55 Packard Caribbean that was being auctioned off. The thing was absolutely beautiful. Mm. 1955, and the reason for my call, is there anybody out there who has a history of car designs or any of the manufacturers have car designers who are willing to speak. You know, last week, I think you were talking about the new Cadillacs, which are, in my opinion, design deficient. I think the when you look at what the standard Cadillac sedan is, and who knows what the model numbers stand for, I have been down that road before. And then you look at the new Chevrolet Impala. I think that's a far better looking car than any of the current Cadillacs. I mean, Cadillacs used to be kind of leader in style and design, and right now they, in at least my humble opinion, they're not worth the money just on design alone. So I don't know if there's anybody. I'm sure the Cadillac probably wouldn't send anybody out saying we designed ugly cars, but
no. Well, it's kind of funny. I was at the Dedham Retired Men's Club yesterday. They meet at the Endicott Estate, and we got talking about that. And I said I had the pleasure once of sitting down with the folks from GM, and it was Bob Lutz at the time. And I said, "What's the future for General Motors?" And he said, among other things, he said, "I don't think Saturn has a life. Probably not Pontiac. I think Oldsmobile was already gone by then." He said, "There's too much competition within Pontiac and Chevrolet to bother having Pontiac around." And, you know, Pontiac's such a great name. I was disappointed to hear that. But he said, "You know, my plan is to raise Buick to the level of Lexus and then move Cadillac to the standard of the world that everybody knew Cadillac for." I mean, you know, there. I don't care whether it was, you know, somebody joking around going, you know, you have a, a Chevrolet wallet and Cadillac dreams kind of thing, or whatever the case is. You know, Cadillac truly was at one point the standard of the world. It was a car that, you know, people looked at and admired all around the world. And now I look at the new Cadillacs and go, you know, I'm not sure what they're doing. And Buick, I think, was actually headed in that direction of maybe being competitive with Lexus. But now with they don't have much to choose from for sedans. And like everybody else, they're focusing on SUVs. And, you know, those on the inside will tell you if Buick stops selling in China, they'll probably go out of business.
Yeah,
because China is hot and cold sometimes, but China for the longest time was the biggest market for Buick. So, and you know, half of what they have, of the three Buick SUVs, I'm not sure any of them made here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
I mean, I think on style, they're better looking than the Caddys.
Yeah. But I don't know if they have the quality of a Lexus, and that was what Bob Lutz said, was I want to try to change both the style, the quality, you know, not just the style, the fit and finish. So when you look at, and he was citing an example of, you know, here's a new Buick, and you open up the doors and it looks pretty good. You open up the trunk and you can see where they only brought the trunk carpet partway down, and then it's metal after that, or it's insulation after that. Or you look under the edge of the seat, and they didn't wrap the material all the way around the seat. And then you look at a car like a Mercedes or a Lexus or something like that, and you can see how they put a little bit more time into finishing up all the edges. And he says, that's what I want to see. And he said, I also want to see reliability, that you have a Buick that's going to run reliable. It's not going to rattle. It's not going to shake once it gets 50,000 miles on it. And then it's not going to start to burn oil at 100,000 miles. And
is Lutz still there?
No.
No,
he's building goofy cars now. You have to remember, he was a guy who sort of ran Chrysler, you know, saved Chrysler. A lot of people will say he saved Chrysler. And then he left Chrysler. He went to the Exide Battery Company. I think he might have got fired. He wrote a book called The Customer Isn't Always Right, which could be some truth to that. And then he was the chairman of General Motors for a while, and then he left. And the last I knew, he was building some sort of electric hybrid pickup truck on his own. But when I did have the opportunity to talk with him, we just sort of chit-chatting a little bit, and what do you talk about with a billionaire? You know, there's only so much. So it's sort of like, you know, what's your first memory of a car? And his father was a Swiss banker, and he's like, I remember being in the arms of my nanny, and we were looking out the window when my father brought a new Cadillac home, and he was in Switzerland at the time. And I said, oh, yeah, I remember just the same thing. I think it was a Rambler,
yeah,
though.
Me too.
And there wasn't a nanny. And then I said, what do you do for hobbies? And he has a home up in Michigan somewhere, and he keeps his Chinese MiG at the local airport, and he goes out and flies around in his Chinese MiG.
Oh, nice!
I don't do that either. But he did repaint the MiG with U.S. flags and stuff on it because he didn't want to shut
down.
That
would probably help.
Yeah,
you know, it
yeah.
could yeah. it could cause some problems in yeah. certain areas.
Yeah,
yeah. The
and it's kind of funny how. And the same sort of thing. I was sitting with the same kind of a weird event, and I see this guy sort of sitting by himself, and he was the president of Jaguar. And my wife was with me. It was at an event in Nazareth, Pennsylvania, and where I got to drive a Jaguar XJ220, which was kind of an odd car. It was a six-cylinder when nobody had six-cylinder cars. The thing would do 200 miles an hour, and I didn't, but... it was so I see this and I said, oh, hey, and he introduced himself. Hi, I'm the president of Jaguar. And I kind of did the same thing. Oh, what do you do for, you know, when you're not being president of Jaguar? And he said, I race vintage World War II airplanes around the desert in Nevada. Again, something I don't do.
Which is you do better than anybody else. So that's.
You know, which is why I joked with Danny DeSantis a little bit about does he still spend his money on very fast boats, and because I know he's an offshore boat racer, and I guess there is no better way to spend money than to go 170 miles an hour in a big boat burning through gas racing with other people going 170 miles an hour. So
the. I think one of the, if I can tie it back to broadcasting a little bit and car designs, let me have the and presentation accepted. Part of the problem is that the financial people often rather than the programming people or the designing people run the operation. I saw that a lot in radio.
Yep.
The time salesmen would become the general managers.
Mm-hmm.
And would become bean counters, and they had no idea about programming, and often it showed.
Yeah,
and maybe the same thing in automobile manufacturing.
Well,
with
automobiles, and I used to joke sort of, and I was told I was probably more right than wrong. That GM had more lawyers than engineers.
And if the way they're going, they're going to have more lawyers than people buying their cars.
Yeah. So, you know, based on that, and, you know, right now, and I mentioned it last week, you know, cars are sort of designed in wind tunnels. That's why they all sort of have similar shapes, because they're all trying to maximize fuel economy. And that's kind of the reason behind it. Where, you know, and the other thing is, where are the great names? Why isn't there a Ford Caribbean or something?
Yeah.
You know, there were great names to cars.
Skyliner, Coupe de Ville.
Yeah.
And
even, you know, even in the 70s and 80s when Chevrolet named every car after a beach in Southern California. With Malibu, and they kind of went on and on for a while. But, you know, just the idea, you know, the idea of having a car that's a, you know, an S90 or a... you know, XLT or and I think cars have personality, and names like that do not give their cars personality. And I think that's a mistake. And whether it's, you know, you kind of look at Volkswagen, it, you know, with rabbits and beetles, and, you know, go name them after animals. It's fine, you know, because it kind of gives the car a little bit of personality. You know, I'm looking out the window of the radio station here, and there are cars with names. There's a Camry and a Honda CRV and a Toyota RAV4 and a Honda Pilot. But you know, if you kind of looked at them, they're three of them are all they're all a box on top of a box, and the Camry is a box on top of two boxes. There's no real style to those cars. They're functional, absolutely, and they're pretty dependable. And I guess it's sort of, in one way, sort of sad that of the four cars that I can see out the window here, there's not a Ford or a Chevy or a Chrysler in the group. So
you wonder, you know, somewhere long before or after me, vintage cars, you know, of this era, will any of them become vintage cars? I can't imagine. I just went online and looked at vintage cars. I can't imagine that someone's going to say the, you know, 50 years from now, the 2018 Cadillac is going to be wanted as a vintage car.
On the other hand, you know, if you look back and you say, who would ever think a Model T would be a vintage car? You know, they made a whole bunch of them. You know, if you keep it around long enough, I think so. But, you know, if you think of vintage as being 25 years old, whether it's vintage or antique, you look at a, you know, I look at cars now and whether it's, and for some reason I see it more in Rhode Island than I do in Massachusetts, and I see antique plates on cars that look like a car that you would drive, you know, you see an antique plate on a Mazda Miata and go, is that really an antique? Well, technically, I guess. But is that ever going to be a super collectible car like a Hudson Terraplane or you know, something like that? I don't think so. But
well, Barrett Jackson, I mean, you take a look at that. I'll let you go. But Barrett Jackson, yeah, when they it seems like they're only aiming at the high performance cars,
right?
Generally, anyway. But
yeah.
Those will always exist.
Yeah, sort of, you know, the old-time car collector thought was buy it with the biggest, most powerful engine because that's going to make it more collectible. And if the roof goes down, the price goes up. So those two things, when you look at, you know, Barrett Jackson or Meekum or any of those auctions, can make it pretty unique. So we'll have to wait and see. I have the opportunity this week. I'm going to the Newport Car Museum. They're down in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. And I had Gunther, the founder, on the show a while back. And he has a pretty extensive car collection. And he has it in a museum, which I guess makes it tax deductible now or something. So, I want to see, and I want to talk to him about why he got these cars and why he thinks they're collectible, just for the same reason you were talking about.
Yeah, hope you can post some of the pictures on your Facebook page.
Gonna try my best.
Well, always great.
All right, take care, Paul.
Call us, call
yep.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Lines are open if you would like to join us. This is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I've seen a lot of weird things. But there's a million-plus dollar Bugatti. In fact, I think Danny DeSantis said he was having a Bugatti maybe coming to his dealership. But this is a full-scale, drivable Bugatti, but it's made out of Legos. It's a life-size model, is more than 1 million pieces, including 2,304 electric motors, 4,032 gear wheels. Lego's version of the Chiron weighs more than a Bugatti. The thing weighs 3,300 pounds. It's about 1,000 pounds lighter than the real car. And it isn't quite as fast. The Lego Bugatti make just 5.5 horsepower, but it'll go 12 miles an hour. Dennis's son was very much into Legos at one point. Let's see if he can go build one of those. So pretty interesting stuff. So 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's talk to our friends up in Medford. Good morning. You're on the Car Doctor program.
Morning, John Paul. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I had a question. I have a couple of Fords, and I haven't changed the spark plugs in them. They're over 100,000 now. They're just getting over 100,000. And I'm thinking, like, you know, years ago you did them every 10,000 or
yep.
whatever there. So do you just keep running them, or do you think it's advisable to change them now? I mean, they're 10 years old, both vehicles.
Here's the problem. Depending on the spark plug, Ford has had some problems with these. Some of their spark plugs have a very long thread. and or very long end where the threaded part of the spark plug is. And right. I have seen some that have stayed in the engines for a long time break off.
Wow.
Which makes it pretty ugly when that happens. So normally I would say, you know, you got a Ford with 100,000 miles on it. For instance, what kind of Ford is? Give me one of them.
An E150 van.
Yeah.
V8. Yeah. 4.6
yes. liter. Yeah, so that van... That van can be one of those vans that, you know, pulling the spark plugs out. First off, it's no easy task. But that's a spark plug that is one of those plugs that can shear off. And you kind of look at that and go, and normally you'd say, oh yeah, it makes good sense to replace the spark plugs, because if you looked at sort of when you're supposed to replace spark plugs, it's probably in the 100,000 mile range with that model Ford. So it's probably due. Let's see, what does Ford say? Give me a minute here. Ford says somewhere to replace the spark plugs. Ford says to replace the spark plugs at, magic number is, got to be somewhere. They must put spark plugs in these things sometime.
It did come with spark plugs, right?
Yeah. If you believe this, you would think they last the life of the car, because they don't seem to have an actual recommendation. I'm looking at the maintenance chart, and... I would have thought 100,000 miles, they would have said, is a good time to put spark plugs in that. And maybe I'm just looking real quick, so maybe I overlooked it, but...
I'll have to grab the manual and see... Yeah.
But, you know, it's... I would say both of those vehicles at 10 years old, a new set of spark plugs in both of those would be money well spent. But like I said, that engine has been... a little bit problematic sometimes when the plugs stay in there. I know a lot of people that have like F-150s with the same engine in it. They'll go to pull the plug out, and all of a sudden they'll hear a snap. The plug will come out. The insulator will come out. The electrode will come out, but the rest of the plug is jammed in the head. And then and Ford has come out with a kit to try to get all the pieces out. But again, it's just a lot more work for something that you're trying to do some good, and all of a sudden, you know, as somebody who owns a shop will tell you, you bring the car in, somebody brings their car in because it's running okay, and you give it back and it doesn't run at all because the spark plug's broken off in it, you know, and it's not the shop owner's fault because it was a design that the plug just sort of seized up in the engine, so.
Wow, and see, now I have an F-150 the same year, 2008. Yep. But the only thing is, I only have like about 40,000 miles.
Oh, okay.
I'm hoping that the truck outlives me,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah. Go on like YouTube or something, and put in that engine and put in broken spark plug and see what you come up with. I think you'll be a little shocked.
Yeah, because you're saying that Ford makes an extractor kit or something.
Yeah, they have a kit that you can kind of drill out the pieces, and you can put like a helicoil type thing in, so you can put a plug back
in.
But all of a sudden it turns into a lot of work, and you got to make sure you know get all the pieces out of the, because you don't want the metal falling in the cylinder.
You could create a major problem. I mean, as far as, that's why now I'm saying to myself, maybe don't touch the plugs then, if that's
well,
the case.
It
seems to be running the same as it did when I bought it, you know, both of them. So
yeah,
like,
so, you know, so sort of based on that, you know, you might want to say, you know what, I'm going to hold on to it. So,
I have a problem with plugs, maybe.
Yeah, I just Googled broken spark plug Ford, and the first thing that came up was some website, AA1 car, and it says, watch out, Ford Motorcraft, two-piece, 16-millimeter high-thread spark plugs that break. The 5.4-liter V8, some of the V10s, some of the Mustangs with the 4.6-liter, the 5.4-liter V8. Plugs can break when you attempt to remove them. And it lists a whole bunch of them where that include it, which looks like your vehicle. Vehicles with these spark plugs include 2004 to 2008 Ford F-150s and E-150s. They have a crimped lower electrode shell that becomes coated with carbon, causes it to stick in the cylinder head, rust and corrode. And says, worse yet, if any shell or fragment falls into the cylinder, it can't be fished out. Many experts recommend replacing original equipment Motorcraft plugs before they get too many miles on them. Over 40, replacing the plugs at low mileage will reduce the chances of sticking. Waiting until the original equipment plugs have 100,000 miles on them is asking for trouble.
Wow.
So
I'm late to the...
Yeah, well. There's a lot of things in my life are that way. So they say... How to remove spark plugs so they do not break. First, start with a cold engine. Loosen each spark plug a quarter of a turn, then stop. Spray some kind of good lubricant like WD-40 or something else, and then let it sit for 15 minutes. Overnight is recommended if the plugs have 80,000 miles on them. After the penetrating oil is a time to work, slowly loosen each plug, applying no more than 35 foot-pounds of torque with a wrench. Retighten half a turn, apply more penetrating oil if you feel anything happening. Remove carbon from the inside of the combustion chamber prior to changing the spark plugs and reduce your risk of the spark plugs sticking and breaking. Using top-tier gasoline can help. If you break a plug, Ford has a technical service bulletin, and NAPA also has a short video on what to do. Lyle, a old-time tool company, also sells a spark plug repair kit. It just makes life a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. Good luck. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Why don't we take another break? Pay some more bills. There's bills around here. Remember, if you'd like something to do with this radio station, drop Pat Ryan an email, patr@salemboston.com. You can come in here and have some fun, sell some advertising, meet some new people. Check it out. Check out Salem Boston. Check it all out. We'll be right back. Just a little deuce tube with a flathead mill. Little GTO, you're really looking fine. Three deuces and a four-speed and a 389. Listen to her tacking up now. And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program at AM950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston on 100.3 FM or WROLradio.com. Remember, you can find, I still post as many programs as possible on johnfpaul.podomatic.com. That is my podcast site. I only have so much storage, so there's about 25 to 50 shows in there. Something like that. Also, if you Google the program, you may find a different podcast site. It's podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T-S. And on that site, it's free and there's no limit. So you can put as many programs up as you want. I don't know how they're going to sustain themselves. I know YouTube does it, but they don't seem to have any advertising. So I'm not quite sure how they do it yet. But right now it's free. And so I put everything up on both sites. If you are on social media, my social media on Facebook is Mr. John F. Paul at Facebook, and there is also the Car Doctor podcast page on Facebook, where I don't put a lot of explanation, but when you see the little picture, if you click on it, it will take you to the podcast so you can find the program if you missed it or you want to hear something over again or you think I said something stupid and you want to just confirm it, you can figure it out that way. U.S. automakers reaffirm a commitment to diesel technology, according to, well, should be no surprise, the Diesel Technology Forum. Today, American automotive executives reaffirmed, and today was September 10th, reaffirmed their commitment to diesel technology as new statistics about the future of the U.S. automotive diesel market came to light at an event hosted in Washington Automotive Press Association, WAPA, which is what that really is. From General Motors confirmed diesel engines could continue to play an important role in the company's lineup of propulsion options. Ford is coming out with a light-duty diesel in their F-150. The diesel propulsion system remains a key component of GM's vehicle lineup with 13 different models offering diesels as an option.
Okay, what's your name?
Consumers around the globe continue to ask for diesel options, especially in our pickup trucks and SUVs. Haven't seen much in an SUV, where diesels can offer outstanding fuel economy and range they demand. In the U.S. and Canada, the introduction of the Chevrolet Colorado diesel midsize pickup and the GM Terrain diesel compact SUV have proven out to be a success. I have never seen a GMC Terrain diesel, ever. General Motors Regional Chief Engineer, our diesel centers of expertise in Italy, in the United States, where all our diesel engines are engineered, are poised to continue serving the world's diesel market for years to come. Well, they might, GM might have diesel engineering in Italy, but I know anyone who's of a certain age remembers that GM tried to build a diesel out of a gasoline engine, and it was built here, and that was a disaster. During the same event, analysts from IHS Market and the Diesel Technology Forum unveiled new vehicles in use and market penetration for the U.S. diesel market. As we heard today, automakers have confidence in diesel technology as a choice, well, except for Volkswagen, for powering tomorrow's cars, SUVs, trucks, and vans. According to Alan Schaefer, he's the executive director of the Diesel Technology Forum and has been on this radio program. The bottom line is consumers want choices, and diesel is one of those choices. And this goes back to what I said many, many years ago, that in the turn of the last century, so in the early 1900s, when you were buying a car, it could run on diesel, it could run on gasoline, it could run on batteries, it could run on wood chips. They actually had a car that ran on wood chips. It could run on acetylene. It could run on steam, which was heated by a fossil fuel of some sort. Could be acetylene. So there was all kinds of things that powered up original 1900s cars. And today, I believe today, that when people want choices, which is what this is all about, you might go and say you want to go buy a Terrain.
Did people put gas in their cars in the 1900s?
Yes, they did. They did them. There was they had gas pumps and everything. So yeah. But there was, and people, and in fact, the early diesel engines were invented in such a way that people could make their own fuel because you could make it out of diesel. Diesel is vegetable oil. So if you grew peanuts, you could make peanut oil and you could burn it in your car. So that was the idea behind the original diesels, were that a farmer could essentially never could make their own fuel forever and ever and ever.
Life hacks. Life hacks. Have you ever heard of life hacks?
No.
Oh, it's like a life hack. I guess you take.
Oh, okay. Life hack. Same sort of idea.
Certain household items or certain things you find.
What can happen is you're going to go out and buy a car and you're going to say, no, I want, and Honda's pretty close right now. You can go out and buy a Honda Clarity, gasoline engine, gasoline hybrid engine, plug-in hybrid, hydrogen Clarity. So the only thing they're really missing is nothing, actually, diesel. So, you know, there may, who knows, there, in some market there may be diesel, which is kind of, you know, it's the reason behind this. Keith, do we have a call over there?
Yes, we do. We have, what's his name?
I don't know. Who wrote it down?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now. Len from Billerica.
Good. Len, is that you?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, how you doing?
How are things up in the Merrimack Valley, by the way?
Well, I'm safe where I am. Yeah. I'm in Billerica. I mean, they got to drive a little ways to get into all of that trouble they had up there.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
Four cylinder engines. I'd like, you know, the six cylinder. But are there any ones that you'd shy away from if you were looking for a car? Four cylinder engines.
No, I mean the four cylinder engines now are, and you know, it kind of started, you know, when people said I don't want a six cylinder engine because it's. Not
yeah,
as powerful
you're
as
breaking
a V8.
Up on me. I can't hear you.
Yeah, you know, it's like I don't want a six-cylinder engine because they're not as powerful as a V8 engine. And the four cylinders, I have a four-cylinder engine in my car that makes more power than the V6 engine it replaced. So you look at that and you go, you know, the four-cylinder engine's fine. And people say, well, how long is that four-cylinder engine going to last? Well, most of us only drive with our foot barely touching the gas pedal. If you drove with your foot to the floor all the time, yeah, then maybe a four-cylinder engine wouldn't last. So I would go out and the engine would be the near the bottom of the list of things I would look at that would make me decide whether I wanted the car or not.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were breaking up for a while, but you get great performance out of the fours today.
Yeah, the fours, I mean, there are some four-cylinder engines that make 300 horsepower. Now, those engines are, you know, people might think, well, they're a little bit like time bombs because they're working so hard. But even at that, when you're out on the highway cruising at 65 miles an hour, you're only using about 15 horsepower. So most of us never really use the horsepower that's there anyway. My little four-cylinder engine in my car makes 185 horsepower. The V6 engine that was in the older version of my car made 7 horsepower less.
Oh, for crying out loud. Yeah, so I wouldn't shy away from a four-cylinder.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, sure thing.
Bye.
So... yeah, four-cylinder engines are pretty amazing these days. I remember the first time I saw a Honda engine that made 200 horsepower. It was almost people looked at it and said, "It's amazing that something that small could make that kind of horsepower." But in fact, you know, we're seeing more and more of it. I mentioned Volkswagen for a minute. Volkswagen may add a pickup truck to their. You know, they had a Rabbit pickup truck once. But they may add a pickup truck. And it's kind of funny. They put out this information very, very early. And they don't know what it's going to be yet. They don't know if it's going to be a pickup truck based on the Atlas, so their big SUV, or it's going to be a rebadged version of the new Ford Ranger, which doesn't really exist yet either. So they're not quite sure yet. But they're saying Volkswagen must decide whether to give U.S. dealers a next-generation Amarok, A-M-A-R-O-K, essentially a rebadged body-on-frame Ford Ranger, or a unibody pickup built in its Chattanooga plant that is derived from the Atlas-based concept. The decision will test the independence of Volkswagen's group in America and see what the German bosses think. So we'll have to wait and see. There's also going to be an Atlas Cross Sport. It's a shorter two-row version of the Atlas, so a bigger vehicle than Tiguan. The Atlas seems to be doing really well. I see a lot of them on the road. The Tiguan grew up in the past couple of years and looks like it's going to stay around till at least 2020. But what's sort of interesting is some of the cars that they claim are going to come to market. The ID Cross, it's a roomy electric crossover that will feature all-wheel drive when it arrives in the U.S. in 2020. It will be built on VW's electric vehicle architecture. The ID Buzz, the retro-style three-row electric minivan. That will be a couple years later. The ID, a small electric hatchback that will arrive in 2021 and will feature onboard navigation and augmented reality. I don't even know what that means. Well, I knew what augmented reality is, but I don't know if I want augmented reality in my car. The T-Roc, barring an outcry from dealers and a sudden shift in consumer preferences, the compact crossover will remain in Europe for the time being and will not be imported. I think that's a mistake because small crossovers are doing pretty well. Of course, they're smart, so. The Phaeton, Volkswagen has, you know, they were talking about bringing back the Volkswagen Phaeton. The Phaeton was essentially an Audi A8, and it was the most expensive Volkswagen at the time. I think it was like an $80,000 car. And I remember showing it to somebody who could afford it, unlike me, and they said, I want to buy this car. And I said, how come? And they said, because it offers everything an Audi has without somebody going, oh, there's a jerk in an Audi. He's just a guy in a Volkswagen. And I'm like, well, that kind of makes some sort of weird sense in some sort of way that, you know, that's a good way to think of it, I suppose. The Phaeton, one of the things, it didn't sell, by the way. It was sort of a failure. But one of the things about the Phaeton, which I thought was pretty interesting, was that was a car that depreciated like crazy the next year or two. And again, it was an $80,000 car, and I bet 2 years later you could have bought it for $40,000. And a lot of people leased them, and when they came off leases, they were a really, really good value, and they were a really nice car at the same time. There's Paul Sullivan sitting over there, right in the corner, breaking headphones or whatever he's doing. Did you put them back together?
Yeah, on the broken chair.
On the broken show. See, yeah, yeah, so. Yeah. But you're sitting, so that's good.
I am. I'm reflecting. I'm thinking,
Yeah.
You want to know what I'm thinking about?
No.
Well, I'll tell you anyway, because it's my turn.
It is. You got like 2.5 minutes.
I like Dennis a lot.
Yeah.
I love Karen, and I adored Marita, but I believe Keith has transmogrified the producer role.
Thank you, sir.
Don't you think?
In a magical and creative way.
Magical way. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
So you've been thinking for a while how to work that word
for several moments. Yeah.
Into another conversation.
A little inside baseball. During the last break, I was talking about something, and I used
South
the word,
Boston.
South Boston, right? I said there's been a transmogrification down there, and JP said,
and I said, what the hell does that mean?
So we did a little vocabulary building during the during the break.
We did, you know, and now
that's always fun.
Yeah. So,
you know, and a new word.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. So, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's good. It's good for you. I think it's nice to engage your brain and challenge yourself and learn new things.
Yeah, it is. Unless my brain is too old.
Well, you know, my dad's living with me now, right? You know that, right?
Yep.
93 years old. Yep. I think he stopped learning.
See, I'm only 30, and I feel like I'm forgetting words, you know?
Well, I mean, you do associate with a lot of different words, and some of them you don't use so much. In fact, if you ever studied or learned a different language and then didn't use it for a while, it goes away.
Yeah, it goes away. It's like when I tried to learn Excel.
Right.
Yeah, that was stupid. It was a waste of time.
I never
used it afterwards.
Oh, probably. Yeah, like I forgot all my French. Yeah. I took a French class. I forgot it all.
Hey, the Rooster is out at
He's
the
out and about,
City Boston
talking about, That's
right?
why we're talking about South Boston, because you know, the neighborhood has gone through a transmogrification over decades.
And Southeast, my old stomping grounds.
Yeah.
But it's still a wonderfully eclectic place. Hey, eclectic, that's another one.
But that word I know.
Yeah, all right.
I've used eclectic.
Eclectic.
It's okay. Yeah. So.
And it's beautiful, and hopefully the weather clears up a little bit, the fog burns off.
I guarantee it.
Yep.
So Johnny's going to be over at the City of Boston Credit Union, so that'll be fun.
And the festival takes place all day today. Yep. The Rooster will check in with me, I think, after 11 o'clock and for a few hours, and he's always up to some kind of glorious mischief. So
He's. I don't know if you heard, but I stopped into the bar he works at.
He's, oh, what a surprise. He works at a bar.
Yeah. He's hysterical. He's over at Bates in Weymouth, at the Weymouth Landing, he was hysterical.
It's too bad he doesn't have any jobs, you know?
He works here, postman, and works at a bar three nights a week. So, but good guy, fun guy, and all kinds of stuff. Yep. Stop over at Boston McLaren over Norwell at Queen Anne's Corner. Check out, I don't know, $50 million worth of McLarens. That's going to be pretty cool. Go check that out. And thoughts and prayers to our friends up in Merrimack Valley trying to get through everything they have to get through up there. Tough time up there. Coming up next, Paul Sullivan and the very best in Irish music with the Irish Hit Parade. Until next week.
Trying to transmogrify Boston Radio.
We are. Till next week, wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Thank you, Keith. Take care. Bye-bye.